I'm Jane Balo, and this year's president of the council, and I'm really happy to welcome everybody here. And we welcome especially our new members. I think you'll find this a very interesting experience, unless you're like some of our new members who know all about it. And those of you who don't, I think you'll find everybody here is happy and willing to help you understand anything you don't understand. We would like to start by introducing ourselves, because that would include the new members. Tell us your name, what you do, and what your expectations are for the RCAC. And Margaret, can I start with you?
Yes. I'm Margaret Carlson. I was CEO of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association for 25 years. I retired in April, and in May, I joined a consulting firm, Bentz Whaley Flesner. We do consulting for higher education and nonprofits. My expectation is to be on the other side of the RCAC process, because the Alumni Association Advocacy Committee helped craft the legislation that resulted in the RCAC. So I will see it on this side and hopefully use the contacts that I have to get some people to apply.
That's wonderful. Bill?
Good morning. My name is Bill Brady. I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota, undergraduate and MBA program. So I have a great interest in the school. I own a business, First Class Recoveries, based in Bloomington. My expectation is to put some good candidates in front of the legislature for the region position.
My name is Jerry Rogers. I'm a family doctor from Moorhead, Minnesota. I've been doing that for 28 years in Moorhead. I'm also a graduate of the university more than once, as are both of my children graduates, and I have a lot of interest in the university and improving it in any way we can, and I can't think of any better way than getting the first-rate people being on the governance part of the university.
Well, our predecessor here, Dr. Paul Dunvery, of course, who is now the new president of Concordia College on an interim basis. Yes, and an old one. So you're well represented up there. David Fisher, welcome.
Sorry to be late, Madam Chair. My name is David Fisher. I live in Minneapolis. I'm an attorney with Larkin Hoffman, Daly & Lindgren, the former Jim Peterson Law Firm, or Erickson Law Firm, rather. And I am a graduate of the University of Minnesota, and as I like to tweak Margaret once in a while, a card-carrying member of the Alumni Association.
My heart.
And I've been on this council for a number of years, and my interest, as everyone's is to get the very best qualified individuals on the Board of Regents that we can.
Okay, and thank you for all your work already on this year's activities. We'll get to that. Billy.
I'm Billy Young. I did not go to the University of Minnesota. I applied, transferring from Iowa, and they turned me down. I'm not mad about it, because I went on to KU and met my husband there in a poetry course, so to heck with Minnesotans. Not really. But I think about that occasionally. I'm a writer. I write nonfiction books and articles. I've got the biography of Louis Warren Hill coming out at the end of the month. My goal is always to find the best candidates, and then hopefully to have them have a decent trip through the stress of going through the legislature. I don't know how we can do much about that, but I hope they'll be treated at least respectfully.
All right, Rebecca Covington?
Yep, my name is Rebecca Covington. I'm a graduate student in the Master's in Advocacy and Political Leadership program at the University of Minnesota Duluth. I received my bachelor's degree from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus in Global Studies and Anthropology. I currently work for the United Way of Greater Duluth and the City of Duluth as their Prosperity Initiatives Coordinator for the Prosperity Agenda, and I serve as Commissioner on the Planning Commission. And I very much look forward to having the student voice represented at the table in selection for the regents.
All right.
Ardell Brady from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm the other Brady on this bunch, so spelled differently, but I'm the mayor of Rochester. This is my eighth year as mayor, and I'm going to try and make it another term at the end of this year, but we'll move that way. Representing, obviously, the Rochester, where the newest coordinate campus of the University of Minnesota is, which is just absolutely wonderful. And certainly, like I think everybody is saying, we're looking for the best candidates, and it's a very dedicated process by this group, and it's always a joy and a privilege to be a part of that whole selection committee. So, and some of us think that we ought to be able to put our priorities in order when they send them up to the legislature. Anyway.
In case you didn't say it loud enough, he's mayor of Minnesota's third largest city.
Yes.
And past president of the National League of Cities.
No, the Minnesota League of Cities. But yeah. Yes.
We'll promote you.
All right. Good.
All right. You go ahead. Oh, This is Sally Olson, and she has been incredibly helpful. I just have to tell you what a remarkable woman you are. And unfortunately, she will not be with us in December because she will be a new mother.
Oh.
No, you tell us what you do.
I am the Commission's Assistant for the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and then I provide staff support to this council. So I look forward to working with you again this year. And Diane will fill in at the December meeting and do great.
She is also the one when I thought we were going to meet in June to kind of get acquainted and set up our committee so they could work over the summer, who told me how much money was in the budget. And there was not enough money for a June meeting. It was like $28.74 or something like that, and that would not have done it. So that's why we're meeting in August. But she has been wonderful throughout the summer, and the research she's done has been immensely helpful. Patrick.
I'm Pat Duncanson. I'm from Mapleton, Minnesota. I'm a farmer in southern Blue Earth County, and I'm excited to be a part of this commission and was just reappointed to be a citizen involvement in both government and the University of Minnesota, and I am very pleased to be here with both interests in mind.
All right, Jim.
I'm Jim Erickson. I was asked to apply by the Alumni Association, so I guess in effect I would like to look at bring their perspective to this process. I'm a lawyer, lobbyist, went to the University of Minnesota Law School, graduated a long time ago. In my 40-year career, I spent a lot of time in this building and in this room and at that table as a lobbyist for a number of clients, including the Grauk, original Grauk group. Mr. Mayor, I represented the folks in Rochester, as Jane knows, worked with Nancy Bradis and David Bishop. You know how that would be.
Oh, yes.
and was pleased to be the professional lobbyist on behalf of that. So I have that background in government and education, and I guess perhaps with my background I might help coach our nominees in the process that you referred to. Thank you. I'm pleased to be here. And I'm sorry, next time I'm going to be here early so I get my appropriate place at the bottom of the table. I'm very sensitive to this, how this room works, and it's seniority based, and I'm going to try and beat you to a corner at the far end. I shouldn't be sitting up here at this high exalted corner where the vice chairman usually sits. So
you will have to arm wrestle Mistress Thatcher for that spot at some point. And I've known Jim since 1970 something, when he taught me all I knew about the cable regulation industry. So, all right, Paul.
Good morning. My name is Paul Taylor. I'm a fall 1961 graduate of the University of Minnesota. I'm in the 16th year of my third career. Been very active as an alumni volunteer for quite a period of time, and I'm looking forward to connecting my Rolodex of kings to Regent candidates.
What other careers did you have?
My first career was with a local company in downtown Minneapolis. At the time, it was a private company, International Milling, and it became a public company in 1970, International Mulda Foods, and I was there for 30 years, bridged early retirement, spent the next 3 years in the local small business community, so I learned the difference between a 48th-floor corner office and 10,000 employees in a Fortune 500 company and a 10-person company, so I've got that perspective and certainly hope to bring a business perspective to this process.
Thank you. Jennifer.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Godinez, and I'm the Associate Director of the Minnesota Minority Education Partnership. Some of you may know the Honorable Representative Carlos Mariani. When he's not sitting up there leading K-12, he leads MMEP. And when he is sitting here, I lead MMEP. We have a co-leadership model. But my background is I actually came to Minnesota to get a graduate degree at the Humphrey Institute. I was a Ford Foundation Fellow in Public Policy for first-generation students. So my parents did not receive a college education in this country. And I went on in the last 10 years, I've been developing educational pathways for students of color. And I'm very interested in the intersection between civic engagement and higher education. So quick note, my grandfather came from Mexico washing dishes, and he grew a huge family. We're all graduates of either master's or law degrees in this country. So I'm very interested in this whole debate right now about Mexican immigrant students in higher education. It's pretty personal for me.
Thank you, Jennifer. Lois.
Lois Josephson. Greater Minnesota Development Services, hearken from Fergus Falls, so close by with Mr. Rogers. My goal in my first term here on the selection committee, my goal is to, like others, get the best qualified candidates that we can, candidates that recognize the business driving engine that the university is for the state, and by virtue of the Greater Minnesota component of my background, the emphasis is strongly on for the state. As we said goodbye to some of our former members last year, one of them, Mr. Albrecht, turned to me and said, "Now you know what my question is." And his question was always about the land-grant mission of this institution and its outreach component that meshes exceptionally well with its research component to drive the economy of the state. So looking for candidates who can perceive that mission along with serving a very large business well.
Okay.
My name is George Sundstrom. I'm a retired union sheet metal worker. In fact, when I retired, I believe it was 2001, I ran for regent of the university. The chancellor at UMD recommended, and Judge Gerald Haney helped me fill out my applicant, and he was a regent here also. Mm-hmm. He was a great friend that just died about a month ago. Mm-hmm. I was on the Workers' Comp Advisory Council here when I was a union representative, and when I had this opportunity to be on this committee, what I want to make sure, what Ms. Josephson said about land-grant university, I want to be able to see the children of working families afford to be able to go to the university. And that's going to be one of the main criterias that I want to see regents that are willing to go to the legislature, testify right there, and try to get this state to reinvest in the university system. Thank you. Oh, I love opera. I got to say that, too.
Good. Richard Ista.
Richard Ista from north of Fargo, Moorhead, from the Rich Red River Valley. I see that this will be my last swing around here in 2012. As I understand, we will not be eligible for reappointment. So I suppose maybe my goal and observation or obligation would be to see to it that the newer appointees follow in our great footsteps. So thank you.
Right. Rich?
Speaking of a new appointee, that's me. I'm Rich Newell. I retired in October of 2008. I was 34 years at 3M. Did a lot of interaction with the university from a 3M perspective, particularly recruiting students to come work at 3M. I got involved at the university both in the Alumni Society of the, it's now called the College of Science and Engineering, which is the Institute of Technology, and I did some work on the National Board with Margaret for 6 years, and I was on the Advocacy Committee. I got a chance to hear about this council, and I decided that would be a good way for me to be able to try to contribute to the University of Minnesota.
Harriet Porter.
Can you hear me? I'm Harriet Porter, and I'm also a graduate multi times from the University of Minnesota as well as the University of Alabama. I actually am a partner with a management consulting firm called Porter & Associates. You can guess who the other partner is, the other half of the Porter family. We focus on organizational leadership development and policy with an emphasis on the human resource development piece. And this would be, I think, my fourth year on the committee. And my goals would be very similar to everyone else's here in the room, with more focus, I think, maybe on transformation as a concept as we're interviewing candidates. The other piece that is important to me is particularly for the new members of the committee, bringing, hopefully with Jane, maybe a little more structure to our voting process.
All right. Hmm. Sylvia, you must be Sylvia.
Yes. Hi, I'm Sylvia Cantillon. I am the student representative on the council. I'm a third-year student this fall at the University of Minnesota, pursuing a degree in biomedical engineering. I'm very active at the University Senate. I am head of the Senate Committee on Student Affairs this fall, as well as the Office of Student Affairs. And, well, it's my first year, so I plan to learn a lot from this council and hopefully contribute some innovative ideas.
Okay, and Baya?
I'm Diane Henry Wangenstein. I'm the secondary synap person with RCAC. Like Sally mentioned, I'll be helping guys out throughout your session time here. I'm the assistant director with the LCC.
And just in time, we have the honor. I was going to say the late Thatcher, Mr. Thatcher, Paul Thatcher. Paul Thatcher, we're just introducing ourselves, and you are the last member of the council.
I'm Paul, I'm a friend of Jane's. Admirer also.
All right.
And grateful for her able leadership.
Love it. Now, I would like our visitors to introduce themselves. You have no microphones, but in the back, speak up.
I'm Carrie Pine. I'm a House staff member of Works and Energy.
All right, you two gentlemen with a pencil and the notebook.
I'm James Nord.
Good morning, sir.
Good. Okay, welcome. Now, and over here, yes, you are. Okay. All right. Now I'm going to depart just briefly from the agenda, which we have not approved yet, but I'm going to do this because Dr. Patricia Simmons is here, immediate past chair of the Minnesota Board of Regents. She's a physician at the Mayo Clinic. She is an outstanding speaker, a great advocate on behalf of the university. And she also chairs the search committee for the new president of the university. Mm-hmm. We have invited her to talk to us about actually whatever she'd like to, but we'd like to have her cover the qualifications and qualities that they're searching for in terms of regent to work. As a chair, she's had an opportunity to observe people, and as a colleague, she does. But also, what's special qualifications should we be looking at as we're talking about the new president? And Dr. Patty Simmons, thank you so much for taking the time to come and meet with us.
Thank you. I have to tell you, it's been a pleasure to get to know this group from the very beginning, believe it or not. You're really an extraordinary group of volunteers, and I have learned from you and with you and developed this deep and abiding passion for the University of Minnesota, in spite of the fact that, not many of you here, I'm not a graduate either.
Yeah.
But my baby just joined Jim Erickson as an alumni of the law school, so I feel connected in many ways. I'm going to make some remarks and share with you just some perspectives on what I believe the Board of Regents needs to be in going forward, and you will play a critical defining role in how good this board is, and I'm deeply grateful and appreciative of what you'll do here. I want to just share with you a few things that I hope will be useful, but more importantly, I'm happy to answer questions or to hear your thoughts and respond to them in any way that would be useful. And all the time I'm doing it, I want to meet with you later, Mr. Estep, because I'm trying to figure out why I love opera and hockey. It just never quite made sense to me, but I do. One of the extraordinary things I learned, thanks to you, is when I was approached about becoming a regent, I thought, I've got to do homework. I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I'm qualified to do this. What would that job and responsibility be? So I started systematically reading. I read a lot, interviewed people, poor people all over the place. I had to listen and ask and answer me. And very importantly, I decided to start meeting with university presidents around the country. To a person, when I've called and asked, would you consider meeting with me? I'm trying to be a good regent for the University of Minnesota. Every president around the of universities around the United States has said yes. And I've targeted places where I thought I could really learn because of something going on there or something about that person. More recently, I've kind of stepped up how many people I've been meeting with since President Brunix announced he would be stepping down. And, of course, he had needed to announce that to the chair of the board a little earlier than publicly. And now what I hear from these presidents is you have one gem of a job there. The presidency of the University of Minnesota is one of the best jobs in the world. You have it all. You're large. You're broad. You're the only research university in your state. And lo and behold, you're in the biggest city right by the Capitol. You get lots of attention. So you're a plum of a place to come. You will be a highly desirable presidency. Well, that has been inspiring to me, telling me we should only shoot for and accept the best president of this university we can have. The people of Minnesota deserve that. The university in fulfilling its mission deserves that. So I'd want you to know that's the perspective that I have on it. The search itself is progressing nicely, very nicely. I'm pleased with where we are in the process. You know the Board of Regents will select the president. Our intent is to have that selection made this winter. That would be, in fact, before the new regents arrive on the scene. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. Now, it's possible that won't happen. Things happen in searches you didn't anticipate. All of a sudden, your finalists, all three, fall off cliffs someplace. So it's possible it would go over, but not likely. So my expectation is that new regents will join very soon after we have a new president of the university. I'll tell you some perspectives on what I think are needed probably all the time and maybe even more intensely as we welcome new presidential leadership. One thing is there has to be appreciation for the mission of the university and the role it plays in this state, educating our population, including first-generation students. I'm passionate about that. It sounds like I share that background with some of the rest of you. But this state's future will be defined by the University of Minnesota in great part because of the research, because of the education, because of the outreach. I was down in your neighborhood last week, I think it was, meeting with 40 or 50 farmers just south of Garden City.
That's pretty close.
I thought it would be close to you, and I was proud I found it. And the passion out there from the farming community about who this next president will be just inspired me. People know how important this selection is because they know how important this university is. Now, I don't think everybody has to come on to the Board of Regents with this kind of passion that I've developed, but we've got to at least have that appreciation of the importance of what happens there. It transcend parochial interests when you realize how critically important this is for our state. You even put up with losing football, it turns out. The second thing that I think, and these aren't in order, I consider them all important. The second thing that I think is critically important is understanding what a Board of Regents is and what it is not. A regent is a trustee of the assets of the university, a trustee of the mission, a trustee of the promise to Minnesota. It's a Board of Regents. It's not a Board of Directors. And that's where some people get hung up. I've heard candidates, and you have too, say, if you like the way the university's run, don't vote for me because, by George, I'm going to get in there and change it. Well, then they should apply in management. And maybe they could be wonderful. But that's not the job of a regent, to fix the university. It is to fulfill the mission of the university and be a trustee of the assets. It is to select the president, ensure that that president succeeds. So that's the kind of attitude that I hope you can find, and a pattern of behavior that you may be able to uncover. A third, I would call it attribute, that I think a regent should have is the ability to understand and adapt how to work in this particular body. Most of the people you'll interview, I hope, will have already functioned on some boards or in some groups. They need to bring some experience. But they need to know how to adapt to this particular board because it is unusual. It's unusual in three ways. One is, other boards most of us will have served on are self-selected boards. You sit on a board and you go, you know what we really need is somebody who has this, and you go find that person. Or, I know so-and-so, they've been fabulous in this setting, let's bring them on, really try it and test it. That's not so the Board of Regents. We're sent there by the legislature. We arrive, may or may not have met each other before, and frankly, it's not how most boards are put together. So you have to learn to adapt to a group that was put together in this way. Another thing you have to do is put aside your parochial bent and try to really look at the good of the whole. And that's harder for some people than others. I think it's sort of hard sometimes to uncover it, but maybe you can help find that. I think you've done a good job at that, to tell you the truth. Looks pretty good to me. Another thing that I hope you would think about is not everyone has to be, but some people have to emerge as leaders of the board. Mm-hmm. And what do you need from someone who's going to be a leader of the board? I believe you need someone who can take that group of 12 and make it into the best board it can be. That's the primary job of the chair of the Board of Regents, not to run the university, not to determine, let's tweak that mission over here, but it is to really make that the highest functioning board it can be. And not everybody can do that, even people who have had outstanding success. You don't need everybody to be able to do that, but you need some leadership. Another thing that the chair of the board needs to have is some respectability and stature in the broader community. And you can define that however you want, but you want your chair of the Board of Regents to be able to interact with a broad audience from around the state and be able to give them confidence in this university and how it's led and how it's governed. So as you look at people, think you'd like to put forward some people who maybe could lead that board. So I'll close there with my statements and look forward to your questions. I'd like to hang out with you. You sound like a very interesting group of people. My husband's on his third career. I'm going to target you to tell the wife of a third career guy how to manage.
Good luck.
Fortunately, he's a good guy. I got a sense that you probably are too. Madam Chair.
All right. Question, Mr. Thatcher.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Madam Post Chair, thank you for your service to the board. I got a couple of questions, if I may please, and they do not express a point of view. It's at all. I have. Could you tell us whether or not you have a good pool of candidates that you're really pleased with, and so on. Number two, I have not the impression, I am told by members of the Board of Regents over time, including this current board, that diverse opinions are not welcome, and are indeed some members of the current Board of Regents have even told me they've been woodshedded in that regard. And it seems to me, if you are a trustee and are fulfilling the role that you suggest, it's okay to ask questions and to suggest alternative ways to implement that mission and so on. And if you could talk just a little bit about how that does work or how it could better work and so on. And finally, If you could address an issue that here I do express an opinion that concerns me. I find often the university tone deaf politically. And tone deaf politically. And as we face the budget, huge, enormous budget deficits that will confront the new executive and the legislature, there are going to be cuts all over the place, including further cuts to the University of Minnesota and in higher education in general. And it seems to me that rather than a defensive posture, the leadership of the university and the Board of Regents needs to embrace that and help lead it rather than fight it and in the end just be losers and so on. Thank you.
These are three really great questions, and I'm kind of excited to answer them. Let me take the first one. The pool of candidates for the presidential search is rich. I'm very happy with it. We have a pool of nominees who I think, if we get them interested or keep them interested and get them up through into the finalist process, the Board of Regents will have an excellent pool from which to select a president. So I'm feeling very good about that. People think there's doom and gloom because of the economy and the state support for higher public education. Who would want to be a president? Well, it turns out people love to be presidents of universities, and our state is not as bad off as some others, or not as bad off as quickly as some others, so we're still considered a beautiful job. I don't know who we'll get, no promises, but I can tell you we've got an exciting pool. The second point, the diversity of opinion, diversity of position, diversity of background, those are all critical to the functionality of the Board of Regents, and not just for window dressing, but really to bring a richness into the conversation. And I think that the people who've had the most struggle feeling that diversity is not welcome are people who are used to being able to function in a different way than the Board of Regents functions. I mentioned a couple of the big differences of this board from other boards. A third big difference is we are public. And public in a different way than any other organization in this state is public. We live with the open meeting law. The legislature does not live with the open meeting law. The judiciary doesn't. The governor's office doesn't. There's no place that does all its business in public except for very rare issues that involve litigation and sensitive personnel issues. That's the only thing we can talk about privately. When the board is meeting and the conversation is at the board, if that's where all the debate, all the discussion comes out, every little piece that's said can be taken out of context, and it looks like we've got a highly endangered university and a highly dysfunctional board. Rather, those conversations have to be vetted in another way within the open meeting law and carefully, because it does this university and this state no good to shatter people's confidence. But the opinions have their place. Some people, let's just pretend, I'm sure everyone on the board reads all their homework now, but what if they don't read their homework? They're sitting there at the meeting and going, hey, wait, I don't like this. Well, you know, that's an irresponsible board member. They had plenty of time to get whatever information they needed to figure out if they like it or not. If they still don't by the end of the day, they express it. I've done that. Others have, too. There's a code of conduct for the Board of Regents that's critically important in the state's best interest and the university's best interest to follow. And some people struggle with how to follow that. Others adapt. But people need to do it. The Board of Regents provides a beautiful forum for people who want to be quoted in public, because we are. But generally we're quoted if we say something really exciting, and a lot of what we say is really boring. I've mastered the art of boring. It was easy for me. So I don't agree with that sentiment.
I don't think people are have been woodshedded?
Sorry? I don't know. People aren't woodshedded. People can disenfranchise themselves with the rest of the board if they don't follow the code of conduct or aren't able to move with the board. We have high standards of expectations. Once the board has made a decision, it's our decision. I don't like all of them either, but once we've made them, we've made them. And so I don't think that that is an issue. Woodshed, no. I would say one can find oneself less effective when the rest of the board says, you know, we know what that person's going to say, says the same thing every time, kind of tired of listening, and in fact, we've moved on from there, and this person hasn't. They do get isolated, but by their own behavior. There's nothing else. That may or may not address your question adequately, and it may not be everyone's opinion. It is mine. The third thing is, I think you make a critical point. I believe the regents need to be more engaged publicly in championing state support as well as private support. I think people have differential effectiveness at that. I think that some people have been wonderfully effective at that and are used and called upon. But I believe there could be more and should be more. That isn't to say that we need a bunch of politically connected people coming on the board. We need people who embrace the needs and go and champion them and have some of the connections by virtue of their own personal accomplishment, the respect to do that.
Madam Chair, if I could follow on, that doesn't quite answer my question.
Oh, sorry.
I think the university leadership has been tone deaf and politically inept.
Oh.
And I agree that you need that the board would be well served by having a couple of new members that have a high political IQ and can add that to the mix.
I think your point, people with high political IQ, is an excellent way to say it. It doesn't mean they all have to come from politics.
Right.
Because that doesn't necessarily work. They need to be astute and respected. And I think that's a very good point, because presidents come and go, administrations come and go. The regents represent the best interest of this whole state, all the parties, all the factions, all the age range, the whole deal, and ought to be able to sort of transcend some of that that politics.
Okay, thank you, Paula.
Thank you.
Billy?
Yes, one of your points resonated with me when you said that in interviewing we need to be aware that looking for people who could have the potential to be leaders on the board, could be the board chair. And that's been in my mind often, and I've come down to wondering how can I detect that quality of leadership, ability, self-awareness, stature in the community that would make them a candidate, because ideally we should pick people with that potential. You have suggestions how to recognize that skill.
Yes, I think there are a few things. I don't think a single interview makes any of us comfortable that, boy, we really know that person.
Yeah.
That person's a superstar. It can backfire. And sometimes people don't give the best interviews. We know that, too. But the interview is telling. How people respond on their feet to questions from you, to me, says a lot. A second thing is, where have they served?
Mm-hmm.
Look for what kind of engagement they have had. If it's all been in a silo, they may be the best person possible in that silo, but yeah, we're in a different place, and it's called a big old field of Minnesota, not a silo. A third thing is, I do think you will identify people who you believe, if this person goes to the House and visits with Representative Rukavina, who chairs the Higher Education Committee, or goes out to 10 miles south of everywhere and has pie with 40 farmers, or goes across the street to visit the CEO of whichever company, Fortune 500 company, you think, we'll feel good about that meeting. We know there's going to be a worthy discussion.
That's helpful.
I think you'll see some of that. I hope you'll find some of that.
Thank you, Billy. Richard is the...
Yes, I want to thank you for appearing before our board. I want to allude a little bit more to what Paul Thatcher talked about, was politically tone-deaf. I don't think that the university and their people that have the proper positions have taken advantage of some of their great leaders, whether it's on the R or the D side.
Mm-hmm.
One of the chairmen of a major committee in Washington who could funnel a lot of funds here, I asked him, have you ever visited with the president of the university or some of the regents? He says, I don't know the president. He's never made any overtures. Now, living by Fargo-Moorhead and seeing how the North Dakota side, that they are just not flush with funds, but the amount of money they're bringing back to those two universities in comparison to Minnesota is almost sinful. I really think there should be a better effort on public relations with the congressional delegations from Minnesota. And that starts with the president of the university, because they are in some pretty powerful positions. They can call and meet with leaders around the world, and they have an ego. And we have to face that. I mean, I know them for years. That a call from the president's office to invite them for coffee or something, I think, would be well worthwhile. And I think it's been neglected over the last 15, 20 years.
Thank you. I think that's helpful comment, frankly, for the function today, as well as for who the regents will be in the future. Mm-hmm. And we're at a very exciting juncture when you think about it. We're going to have a new president of the university. We're going to have a new governor. We're going to have some new people in the state legislature. There have been, I think, growing developments in the Senate, the U.S. Senate, growing relationships. There are others that need to be grown, and increasingly these are going to be important because the university is going to compete for funding, for ever less funding from our state and federally. Your points are very well taken. I think it's a critical area, again, for us today, not just for whoever the next regents may be. Understand it's a challenge, and I don't mean this to sound like the excuse that it is. It's a challenge to have 12 regents lined up on message and be equally effective in any setting. It does come to your point. We have to have a president really lead that charge, and the regents really help support that charge rather than the other way around, even though we are elected to the public. We have to do it well. Thanks for the point.
All right. Lois Josephson, please.
Thank you very much, Dr. Simmons, for coming. As an attorney, I think you as a doctor answered the definition of a Board of Regents very well in talking about a trustee of assets and mission, and that you don't change the institution from that position. My view would be that the change comes in asking the questions that can help define the strategic direction.
Absolutely.
And so I would be interested in your thoughts about the Board of Regents and strategic direction with the university, and any particular skill sets that could be helpful as you think about that right now.
Thank you.
And then I have a follow-on question.
Thank you. It's a very good point. Any board should be asking those challenging, critical, provocative questions. That doesn't necessarily mean in public, though we love when the Daily quotes us. Oh my! You know, I have all of them on my Rolodex, just in case they want to talk with me.
There they go.
But you ask those questions, and I treat a president with respect until he or she proves they shouldn't be respected anymore. Then you take them out. But when you are, when you respect the president and want the president to succeed, you ask those provoking, sensitive questions in a respectful way, and that's privately. I would do that with any of you rather than at this committee. Say, why'd you send off so-and-so? No, I would challenge people privately and have it be a meaningful conversation. That must happen. You must have regents who know how to do that in a way that's effective. There are ways that are highly ineffective. We all know them. I've done some of them. So that would be my response. You're absolutely right, but also need to do it in the appropriate, effective manner.
And then the follow-on question, if I may. There are rumblings. I don't know how deep they are and how much credence they have, besides even beyond their depth and breadth, about Minsky University relations, mergers, and those sorts of things. That obviously falls to a board-level discussion, and it certainly goes to a long-term strategy. Are there skill sets that would be helpful in having that discussion on board?
To me, I'm going to sort of expand from your first question when I talk about this. If you recognize the regents are charged with serving the entire state through the University of Minnesota, it's a little difficult to understand and best take on a role beyond that, but we need to. And I, in my opinion, the most effective way of doing that is when there's some very strong leadership in the state that's helping oversee and pull that together, then bring these groups together. Right now, there's a pretty good degree of mission differentiation between the two systems. But there are areas we would, if we were starting all over, there's nobody to put together just like this, I don't think. Not anybody who's thinking of the best interests of the whole state. But it's what we've got. Some real leadership, I think, from the top. The legislature to really take this on, governor to really take this on and say, we can't go on like this. There's a less expensive, more effective way of doing this. Let's find it. Put that group together. There ought to be some regents who could contribute to that process. Alone, I don't think they should get out and try to lead that process. I don't think any one of the institutions can and should. But you'd want the quality of people we were talking about that have the stature, the knowledge, the best interests of the entire state to be there so they can participate.
Great. Is there anyone else with a question? Pardell?
Regent Simmons.
Mr. Mayor.
This is way down on the list of importance, but I'm just curious, what influence does the Board of Regents have with the president on things like adding another school to the Big Ten?
That's a presidential decision.
Okay.
Across the board at the Big Ten. That's how it's set up. It doesn't require a governance decision at our university. Okay. And I don't know about the other universities, but I doubt it. Okay. Not in the Big Ten. And I would say that is an area where the regents did not engage. Whether they should have engaged more, it's a good question. I know questions were asked.
Good, thanks.
That's all I know. I want to get back and add another point about the strategy. I recognize, for example, the University of Minnesota right now has a strategic plan. The Board of Regents, if you will, directed the administration to create a strategic plan, because we needed to know we were all marching in the same direction so that we could prioritize the distribution of resources correctly. So the regents regents, in my opinion, should demand a strategic plan or something equivalent, and indeed we did. And then we oversee it.
David Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Simmons, are you able to tell us whether the search for the president is national or international in scope?
It's largely national. We would have no bias against an international candidate, but that is a high challenge. There are very few institutions in the world that have enough similarity that we would feel confident the successes there could be leveraged here. For example, we're the only country that, well, compare us to Europe and South America, we don't have a national university. The states function, and that's a different world than many of them are used to. There are probably institutions, maybe in Canada, which would have enough similarity. We're absolutely open to international candidates. They also have to be able to come here. They have to be able to get a visa and a green card and the whole deal or whatever they need. So it's more of a challenge when you think of a time frame. So we're open to it. I think the likelihood is less high than a national candidate. And we are looking internally and externally.
Regent Simmons, to follow up on that, are you looking at people with higher education experience, business experience, or all of the above?
As you can imagine, we're looking for someone who has it all and has proven he or she has it all. The Board of Regents has declared what the characteristics and attributes and experiences must be, and that includes coming from a background of success in academics, in higher education, and proven track record on effective management and transformation. So it's the whole deal. The interpretation I have of that is the president must be highly regarded for academics in academic circles and personally have overseen or had the ability to manage incredibly well and it be transformational in nature as we face a real new budget model for higher education in this country.
What is your timeline? I'll get
The process is underway, and it's actually the sort of background process has been underway for a long time, interviewing multiple individuals, getting information, kind of sorting through. We've identified and hired a search firm to manage the candidate part of the process and indeed identify and help us vet candidates. We have appointed, the board has appointed and charged a search advisory committee. It's not the selection committee. It's an advisory committee. That committee has met once. We'll meet late this month and into the fall. That committee will take the pool of candidates and bring it down to people who meet the board's criteria and who are willing to be candidates, and then serve that group up to the board. That's going to be in the fall. And the board will narrow that down to finalists, and then select. The board will do its interviews, and then narrow down from that finalist to the top choice, and that'll be in the winter. Okay. For Paul seasonal, it's a seasonal process.
Excuse me, Paul, and then Harriet.
Madam Post Chair, do you lead that committee?
Yes, sir.
Yes, our state's leading mayor. reminded me to ask this question. In these,
he wants my vote, so I'll bet it's going to be really nice.
in these days of limited resources and shrinking resources, it seems to me that this, implicit in this is some political advice to you and our university. We have, in the sports business, our colleges and universities actually find themselves really working for professional sports, developing the athletes and bringing them on and so on. And our universities participate in that by giving scholarships, significant scholarships, and more than scholarships. The public then observes that in their junior year, prior to finishing their education, maybe their sophomore year, that they leave the university to go into professional sports. I think it would be politically prudent for a new president to take a public position in opposition to that and ask for the teams that are the beneficiaries of that talent thus developed to repay that amount that the university's expended. If it's after a 4-year and successful career and so on, that's fine. But it seems to me that would, one, signal a recognition of an unfairness that's happening, mm-hmm. and unfairness to taxpayers, and number two, increasing resources for other students. I think there's an idea in there, and I am aware that it is bubbling beneath the surface among some members of the legislature, and I think you could develop something there that would serve the university, our new president, well, and he could lead that in the in the councils of sports that our university presidents ostensibly participate in.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
That is a good idea. Harriet.
Post Chair Simmons. I think that as particularly Billy and I and anyone else that chooses to be on the criteria defining part of this initiative for identifying regent candidates in the interview process, is it possible for us to actually get a copy of the criteria that was given to the search committee
for
their recruiting?
Absolutely. Be happy for you to take a look at that. Brian, would you help me out? Brian Steves from the board office. We have a public website. It's up and going that has the criteria on it and, importantly, a place to send us information. It's a bidirectional. So please go to the website for the search and take a look at the criteria.
Okay, thank you.
and submit nominees. I don't think you can have too many nominees. I want too many.
There are so many questions that could be asked when we have a knowledgeable and an articulate guest who knows all the answers.
Yeah.
But we don't want to detain you any longer, but we thank you for this time that you've spent with us. And I know that lurking in the minds of a lot of us are these questions about the budget that have to do with the MinSCU system and the University of Minnesota and the future of how these systems work together. Yeah. And that's another thing I'm sure our candidates will have to deal with. Anything you'd like to ask us?
No, but I care deeply about what you're doing, and I don't want to distract you, but I want to tell you I really find it to be an honor, and it gives me great encouragement that you were interested in knowing what a regent might think would help us be a good board and therefore serve the state's best interest. So thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
All right. Sorry. Do you have one more question?
I have one more question, but I won't ask it as such. Maybe pass it on for potential action. We talked a little bit about preparing candidates to go through the process. Might we ask if those who just went through, or perchance the last two rounds of region candidates, if they felt inclined to give us some feedback and guidance on that? Might
okay.
that be?
Thank you. Thank you. All right, let us first take our agenda. We're going to try and get 2 hours' worth of work done in 55 minutes here. So are there any additions to the agenda that you have in front of you? And if not, can someone make a motion to approve the agenda?
So move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right, the minutes from the December 11th meeting are put together for you.
Move approval.
Second.
Actually, yeah. Second?
Yes.
Do I hear a second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. I love this group. Announcements. First, I want to say we Pat and I had some really good ideas about an expanded executive committee. And our own Sally Olson did this great research for us and told us about our rules of governance that say you can have the chair and the vice chairs, and that constitutes the executive committee. If we want to consider that over for our next meeting and put it on the agenda, if you would like to add a vice chair, for example, because there are only two of us, but we can consult or we can appoint a committee to help with the business of the council that can meet, and which could be an executive committee, or at least a help to the chair and the vice chair. So I want you to think about that. We will put that on for our December meeting based on our agenda at that time. Review of the RCAC process. There's a handout. It's this one called the House Research Short subjects on the Research Candidate Advisory Council, and I think Sally Olson's going to hit the high points for us.
I can hit high points, but Kathy Novak did a really good job in summing up the whole election of university regents last cycle for us, and nothing has changed in our process of the election of regents. But I'm just going to briefly sum up. Most of you know, but the charge of the RCAC is to develop the selection criteria, which Harriet just referred to. There's also a copy of last year's selection criteria report in your folders, which I think Billy will speak to, or Harriet.
Okay.
But the other charge of the council, as you know, is to come up with to recommend 2 to 4 candidates to the Joint Legislative Committee, which consists of the higher ed members in both the House and Senate, for each position open on the board. And as you know, we're beginning our recruiting process, and at the next meeting in December, you will meet to narrow down candidates to interview and then come back together in January to conduct those interviews and make your final recommendations to send to the Joint Committee, which will meet in February. And then they will make their recommendation to a joint convention of the legislature, which hopefully will meet in March. but we never know. So, but otherwise, if you have any questions, just this is a really good document. Okay. And I'll be here after for the new people.
Thank you, Sally.
Madam Chair.
One other thing. If you have cell phones, if you could turn them off or just move them away from the microphones, that's what's picking up the feedback.
Madam Chair, if we could ask staff to send us such things as this in electronic files so we can add them to our database equally and don't have to scan them in and stuff.
That's a good point. Yeah. I was going to say it's in the file, but you're right. If you get it electronically, it helps you.
Thank you.
All right, the RCAC schedule for 2010 and 2011. You have the selection of candidates to interview on the 10th of December, the interviews January 10th to 14th. And if you have any questions about that or any reasons why we should change this, any of it, please let us know and we'll talk about it.
But would you welcome a motion to adopt that?
Yes. They adopted it at the RCA meeting in December, so we can reaffirm it. If we want to.
Well, no, I mean, if it's adopted,
it
is our schedule.
It is. Thank you, Paul. It is adopted. We're going to review vacancies and expiring terms on the university. There's a handout for vacancies on the board, of which, you can't say vacancies, I guess terms expiring. Anthony Baraga, Dallas Bonsack, Steve Hunter, and David Larson. Boy. Is there any information that you have that
Dave actually has some information.
All right.
I've been tattled on. Yes, Madam Chair, I, as part of our recruitment efforts, we thought it would be important to call each of the incumbent regents whose terms are expiring and inquire whether they had an interest in reapplying, just so it would help our focus our recruitment efforts. I have spoken to three of the incumbents, Regent Baraga, Regent Hunter, and Regent Larson. And of those three, Regent Hunter and Regent Larson are reapplying for what will be their second term as regents. Regent Baraga has indicated he is not reapplying. He doesn't see that there would be anything that will change his mind at this point. And he is finishing his second term. Regent Bonsack also is finishing his second term, but I've not gotten a hold of him to speak to him. I've left a voicemail for him to call, but told him I would follow up with him.
So far as we know, there is one vacancy.
For certain, there is one vacancy in the 8th Congressional
for
District.
For the time being.
And I might add that Regent Bonsack, who is in the, who, as they say, is finishing his second term is in the 2nd Congressional District. And I'm reminded by this committee as well as by these regents themselves that there is this unwritten informal rule that regents serve two 6-year terms and then usually retire.
Okay. Thank you. All right. And then you also have a handout that which one have we got now? The current makeup of the board of regents, that said the RCAC. You have the demographics of the current board of regents, and I suppose that would be part of your report, too, to talk about that. All right, we'll go to committee review discussion.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. May I come back? And
sure.
I don't want to leave that review of vacancies. I'd like to be respectful of the fact that us rookies should sit at the end of the table and say little, but since we don't apparently meet again until December, right, I'd like to just put on the table a thought that I have. You'll see that in my service here, you'll all have to be the big, pure thinkers, and I'm practically driven and politically driven. So I ask this question. Yeah, I think it's very informative to know that probably, if Regent Bonsack decides to honor that informal rule, two are not reapplying and two are. So I'm, in my role, in my career, are always very, very sensitive to incumbency. I'm looking at the summary of the election of regents that was passed out here, and much of what we do here is statutory. but I see the bottom page where it says the advisory committee or the advisory council recommends regent candidates. It says the council must recommend 2 to 4 candidates, but that doesn't, there's no statutory cite there. So I ask the question, is that true? Where does the must come from? And I'm going to just raise the possibility that we might, and I don't think we've done it before because of that statutory charge, we might think about giving a little bit of deference to incumbents applying as opposed to others. And I say, for example, in 2005, I pulled out the 2005 report that brought the names of these four incumbents to us. The two open seats at the time, I assume they were open, the third district and the at-large seat, 20 people applied for the third district, which was apparently open because there must have been nobody, the incumbent must have said he wasn't. 27 people applied for the at-large position. Only 4 applied to go against an incumbent in the 8th district, Regent Braga, and only 7 applied in the 2nd district to go against Commissioner Bosacker, which obviously tells us that it's going to be difficult to recruit people to run against an incumbent. That's the facts of life, I think, and I think that's what you have found before, and that number shows that. And I know we can't change it, particularly if this is statutory, but I'm wondering down the road if we might give some thought to thinking of incumbents that are seeking reelection more as a retention question, if you will, as opposed to the kind of the discord that gets put on the table when we have to come up with a name who's going to run against a serving and a perhaps well-serving incumbent. I just raised that question. I know we are bound, apparently, to give 2 names. I think there have been times where the incumbent has reapplied and not been recommended. I think that's happened in your history. So that happens, and that, in effect, is a retention election. But I just raise the question about, as you do that, about what view we take of the incumbents, and do we work quite as hard seeking candidates against incumbents as we do in vacancies?
But it is a statutory requirement, though, that we, at this time, that we present 2 to 4.
At least 2.
Yeah.
So that is statutory. It's not cited, but that's true.
Turn the page over.
Let's see. There you go. See? I should know that.
Madam Chair, I had asked staff yesterday in a conference of our recruitment committee to provide us information on the history of that very subject. Do we have that information?
Still working on that. That one, our database isn't exactly structured for that. But to answer a question that did arise in that, there have been candidates who applied more times than once before eventually making it on the board.
The question I was trying to get to for Jim was the history of returning regents not being reseated. It's vastly the exception. I think I can only think of a couple. Is that right?
Three?
Been a couple.
Three?
Four. I don't know, at the most.
Three maybe at the most over how many years we've been at this, 20-some years. And so but the fact of the matter is you have to actively recruit or you'll never be able to come up with a minimum of 2, and they have to meet the standards. They just can't be names and bodies and so on. I mean, we need to be responsible about this. But the facts of life are very clear. And they're clear in the numbers that you indicate. The people aren't going to, you know, walk into the meat grinder.
I believe, if I may, Madam Chair, pardon me, if you can, I need to be recognized. I feel like I'm in the legislative hearing, so I assume I'm recognized. I think a recent case was a incumbent didn't come forward from this committee and was reelected by the legislature. So that happens, too.
Regent Forbinius, yes.
Yes, indeed. So it's just a complication. When you're dealing with incumbent seats, I raise it. Apparently we can't change it.
Save a legislative change. We can't do
right.
that.
Yeah, I understand. I only raise the question.
I think you have retention of judges,
Jim. I'm just wondering if that isn't a better model. But
I know.
It's not the model we have today. I had to raise that.
All right. Any other questions before we go on? David.
Madam Chair, just a point of clarification, because I'm sure it will come up. And since we only meet three times during this cycle, it probably is important to put this on the table. Now, I don't know that there was any precedent setting to this body not advancing an incumbent regent. But it does reflect the fact that this body can do what we collectively feel we need to do. Regardless how you feel about that particular incident. What we did debate at the last cycle was whether we should advance four for each seat, regardless of whether or not we think that we prefer them. If they're qualified, then we have that option of advancing as many as four for each seat. We made the decision, correct me if I'm wrong, anybody around the table, we made the decision, at least in the last cycle, that we were not going to do that. We weren't just going to advance anybody qualified. We were going to advance the people we thought were the best qualified. And the legislative committee that is to consider those have to rely on that slate that we give them. And if we only send two for each seat, those are the only two they can consider unless the rules will state this, at least some unanimity or supermajority of the committee has to bring in somebody that we did not recommend to them. So we have a great deal of clout around this table, and I think we should know that going into this process.
Okay. I question, Madam Chair, whether or not that supermajority is right. I think they could move a...
No, I think 100% of one body, either the House or the Senate, have to agree to bring somebody forward. It's some kind of rule like that. It's in the document.
I don't think that's correct.
I think it's a majority. I don't think it's a supermajority.
I think it is not
majority, not supermajority.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. We're going to go to the committee review, and how I'd like to do this is, this is not a handout, but I will list the committees, their responsibility, and which ones have a vacant chair and which ones don't, and I'll take them by committee. If you have an interest in one of these committees, you can tell me today, or you can tell us, Sally or me, or both, between now and December, but I would like committee chairs before we proceed in the planning for our December meeting. Interview process and question. The task is to make recommendations as to how, during the interview process, the council can better assess the depth of each candidate's knowledge, understanding, and experience as it relates to the governance of a complex public university. The chair of that committee is vacant at this time. The current members are Billy Young, Harriet Porter, and Lois Josephson. Do I have anyone, A, volunteer as the chair of that committee? Would you like to do that, Harriet?
Very much so.
Thank you, Harriet Porter. And now I would like to have any volunteers to serve on that committee. Remember, this is the one to make recommendations how during the interview process the council can better assess the depth of each candidate's knowledge and ability to provide governance to a complex institution.
Madam Chair, if I might suggest, maybe we should go through all the committees and describe them.
Yes.
Beforehand. That makes sense. I'm just sort of a, you know,
well, that's
from
all
the
right.
top. All right. Candidate Orientation Committee is to prepare regent nominees to proceed with the legislative phase of the regent selection process. This is after they are candidates and have been through the Regent Candidate Advisory Council, and to assist with the coordination of public events to introduce candidates to legislators and other groups like the Alumni Association and organizations like that. That's candidate orientation. Recruitment and Public Relations. Dave Fisher has agreed to chair that one. I think you have almost a full committee, but you're still open to interest. And we'll get your report when we're through with assigning people to the committees. Recruitment prepares a recruitment plan engaging individuals, organizations, and media. This will enhance the ongoing work of individual council members to identify and recruit highly qualified applicants. Document Review Committee. This reviews and updates or revises as necessary the documents of the RCAC, including both the council's operational and candidate recruitment materials. References. This is the one that will recommend procedures to ensure consistency of quality in the checking of interviewee references. And Nominations Committee to prepare a slate of officers for presentation to the council in the fall of 2011, I think you said. So that one is not critical this year. But now that you've heard the committees, one more time, interview process and questions, candidate orientation, recruitment, public relations, document review, references, and nominations. So we go to candidate or, well, first of all,
Chair?
Interview process. Yes.
Have I missed it? I don't think you've referenced selection criteria report.
The which?
The first one, A, A on the agenda,
selection criteria report. That wasn't listed on the sheet, but that is the council that Billy and Harriet have been looking at, and they work to, it's open for members to.
Yeah,
they
will be
the
making a report.
Criteria.
Yeah, okay. I've got to write that down. Selection Criteria Committee. Okay, interview process and questions. Harriet, you've agreed to chair it. Is there anyone who would like to serve on that committee, a member of the council?
I'd like to serve on that
Jennifer
committee.
Jennifer and Rich, right? Okay, candidate orientation. That's to bring the people that we choose as candidates up to speed on what will be required of them with respect to the legislature. Jim?
I would volunteer for that.
Good. Want to chair that? I'll give you a chance.
He's got it.
I'll give you a chance. On that committee are Richard Ista, Billy Young, Bill Brady, and Margaret Carlson have indicated their interest.
And, Jim, I've been through that helping orientate in the past, so I'll help you, but I can't chair it, but I'll help you with that.
Well, I defer to the other commissioners that have been on the committee before if they wish to chair it. Otherwise, I'd be happy to.
New blood. Take it.
I'll throw my hat in there. I tagged along at a couple of things last year, and I wouldn't mind.
Would you like to do that?
Are we allowed to do more than one?
The what?
Okay. And I'll leave my name on interview process and questions, and I will add my name to this.
Okay. But you will chair it.
No, I will not chair it.
You're going to help Jim chair it.
We're helping Jim.
I simply said I'll add my name to this.
Oh. Well, anybody else?
Yeah, I would be interested in that.
You'd like to do it? Be on it or chair it?
No, be on it.
Diana, okay.
I'm still a rookie.
You have to know I have a hearing deficit from playing the piano and the trombone in high school. So you have to speak up if you want me to get it straight. So, Jim, I think, Richard, do you want to do it?
Pardon? For?
Chair it?
No, thank you.
Okay. Jim, you're it by default. Unless Bill Brady would like to. You're on it? All right.
I defer.
We're very democratic with a small D or a big D. Jim Erickson, you're the chair. That's a big D. All right. Recruitment. David Fisher is the chair. On that committee are Joanne Stately, Paul Thatcher, Bert Swanson, Sonia Cairns, and Margaret Carlson. Anybody else that you would like to solicit, or anyone else that would volunteer for the recruitment committee? You've already met, haven't you, pretty much?
We have, Madam Chair, and I think we have nominated everybody on the council to be a part of this action, so we'll have plenty of work to do.
All right. We'll get your report in a few minutes. Document review. We don't have any members on that committee, and the chair is empty, vacant. Who would like to do document review? Huh?
Is that a staff function with the chair? Yeah. It seems like it should be. Yeah. This is sure a lot of committees for a board of 24. So if that one could be a staff function with the chair brought to the committee,
okay.
It
All
seems
right.
like it would make sense.
We'll do that.
Looks like it's up there.
Jane and Pat will do that with Sally
nice
or whoever it is. All right. References. Pat Duncanson and Lois Josephson.
This I'll sign up for that.
All right. Paul Taylor, thank you.
I'll do that too. Rich.
And Rich? Good.
Madam Chair, as a practical matter, everybody's on that committee and everybody's checking references.
Absolutely.
As a practical matter.
But this part was to recommend procedures mm-hmm. to include consistency as well as working on it. Okay. Paul and Rich, would either one of you like to be chair for the record?
No.
I think it's always best that experienced people serve as chair. So
at least
it would decline
Pat
that
Lois.
Invitation.
Lois has already got another committee.
Okay, then I'll chair.
Thank you. I'll be vice chair on that. All right. Nominations, we'll leave that one till December. Think about who wants to be on the nominating committee for next year. And selection criteria, Billy Young is the chair.
Mm-hmm.
Harriet Porter is a member. Who else would like to be on the selection criteria committee?
Madam Chair, what it will involve, I believe, will be, I don't see a need for a meeting, but we will communicate electronically and review these and see if they need to be
okay.
modified.
David? Sure. David Good. Will be on your committee.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you.
Anybody else? Jerry?
Have my email?
Don't you love that when they say they'll, you know, meetings, but electronic communication?
Yeah. Yeah.
We believe in that. The other thing I would say is that if any of the committees want to meet after a meeting like today, as Sally has suggested, they could go to the transportation building cafeteria and hold a small committee meeting afterwards. Mm-hmm. But that, you can think about that for our December meeting, and unless, because I know David's already held his. All right. What have we missed?
I think we've got all the committees. So.
Got them all, if everything that she's given me. All right. Now, may we have a report? From the, Billy, do you have a report?
No, the copy of the criteria as were previously developed is right here. There's no point in reading it.
It's called the 2009.
Right, but it was done right at the end. Really, it was 2010. It happened to be December. But what the committee will review it and come up with some more recommendations. If someone has something to, if you've read it and want to comment now, I will take note of them.
All right. David.
If you don't mind, Madam Chair, and I'd like, for those that are new here today, we do have a statutory requirement to deliver to the legislature at the time we make our recommendations a set of criteria that we used to make these selections. So at least there's some guidance to the legislature of how we got to the point that we were. The criteria in your packet is that report to the legislature, so it actually reflected the criteria we used last cycle, and it doesn't mean that we need to use that same set for this cycle. As a matter of fact, I think that, as everybody knows, we have a leadership transition coming up, and that might be reflected in this new set of criteria.
Okay. Any comments? Reactions? All right. Would you like to give the recruitment committee report?
Yes, Madam Chair. And if you don't mind, I'm going to digress just a wee bit because I misspoke about how candidates are brought before the legislature who are not referred by this group. And it was a quirk. It was just not the quirk I said it was. The committee. The Joint Legislative Committee can consider candidates we don't provide to them, but you have to have support for that from two senators and three House members.
Yes.
And if you can't get that five-member quorum, you are not going to be nominated before the legislature. So it was quirky, but it wasn't a supermajority. I apologize for stating that.
This is a report of the recruitment committee, and I won't take but a few minutes here, but since we did meet, I'm going to do justice to the committee. This is a committee made up of Sonia Carnes, Margaret Carlson, Paul Thatcher, Joanne Stately, and Bert Swanson. Joanne was not able to join us the other day because she thought that the meeting was a day later, but I did get word from her on that. What we've determined as a committee is that we're going to really start doing this after Labor Day. We're kind of up the old school. We're not starting August 10th like the legislature has devised for our primary. We're going to start after Labor Day and after the state fair starts and all that, and do a press release. A press release, a draft, is in your packet, as well as a recruitment letter that is sent out to organizations is in your packet. And what we're going to be doing is revising that. I think one of the things that one of our members, Margaret, actually recommended is that we need something a little bit more punchy than just what we've used every year to date, particularly considering that we have a new leadership change coming forward. And understand, at least from our perspective, that it isn't just the leader of the university that is changing, but a new leader also means administrative change, and some reflection of that is going to probably be what we're going to focus on for looking for new recruiters for this group as well. So they may not be involved in actually choosing the new president if, in fact, they come up and find someone before the turn of the year. But certainly helping this president move forward is going to be critical for these new members. So what I would ask is, and I think the committee has authorized some of this, the committee certainly is going to be looking over these recruitment letters and press release and wordsmithing it. You can get those either to me or to Sally Olson if you want to participate in this. So if you have any critical ideas or if you have suggestions of points that we want to make, you may not want to redo the whole letter, but any ideas you have concerning what could be snappy and what could be punchy and what we should be getting out in the public would be welcomed by our committee, and we'll take that into consideration. We have a multimedia effort going forward. We are planning to contact editorial boards to see if we can get newspapers in the various districts that we're interested in, the 2nd and the 8th and the 3rd. And those are the three districts that have incumbents now that are up for re-election or for where there are going to be term limits. And we also have an at-large regent. Regent Hunter is an at-large regent. So we're going to be making sure we contact the editorial boards of major newspapers and media in those districts to see if we can get them to write something about this. We are going to be sending out recruitment letters to all the legislators, congressional offices, as well as to past candidates who interviewed in the last, I think it said one round. It might be two rounds since this is... we still have candidates that are somewhat fresh in those categories, and send notification of openings to certain listservs. And Margaret has, off the top of her head, had rattled off a number of listservs, including the Minnesota Foundation Trustees, Minnesota Medical Foundation, Fairview Hospital, Itasca Group, others, to see if we can get them to actually put out information concerning these recruiting efforts as well.
But if you have other lists, how we essentially will do it is to prepare the email, then send it to the CEO of those organizations and say, please get this to your board, because then the board will look at it if it comes that way. So if you can get your list to Sally... this is effective. This is how we always did it, as Paul, Jim, and Rich knows. We've done this for years with the Alumni Association, Pat.
Good.
Yes. So really, and we have talked to the Candidate Selection Criteria Committee, too, about their work, because that will reflect on our recruitment efforts. We're going to have to actually tell people what we're looking for, and so we are going to look for some input to that effort as well. So when I indicated earlier that we were going to recruit everybody on this council to be a part of our recruitment effort, I don't think that was facetious at all. We were actually hoping that we could solicit some help from you, as we already have. We've already mentioned the opportunity to send edits on any of the materials that we have for recruitment to either myself or Sally Olson. Any list that you think we might be able to address or suggestions of people we could contact would be helpful. But in addition to that, there are a number of things you all should be doing as members of this council. We, in particular, are going to need some help in the 2nd and 8th and congressional districts where we think we have incumbents who are not running again, because we need to identify now people who are going to be coming. So Rebecca and George, you're kind of the representatives of the 8th Congressional District. We hope that you can help us perhaps identify some people or make some suggestions. And Shelley is from the 2nd Congressional District, so we'd need probably some help from her as well. And we'd like each member to think and make contact with people you know. And think of it in two tiers. People you know would be good regents and that you want to encourage to come, and that's part of what we do. Word of mouth is part of that. They do apply, so there's no conflict of interest there. They have to go through the process. But the second tier of that is to contact people you know who might know others who might be interested. And this is a word-of-mouth kind of campaign. It's informal, but it has been effective in the past. And that's just trying to get people to think about good regents. And the third, I suppose the third tier to that, is that you are all members of leaders in your various communities, contacting organizations that you know, and also asking these questions, not only for the purpose of getting our recruitment letters and information out to these folks, but actually talking in a meeting like this where you may know some people and suggest to them that they may consider the possibility of applying or having others apply as regents of the University of Minnesota. And that is the conclusion of the report officially, although you had mentioned, Madam Chair, earlier the demographics of the Board of Regents, and I wanted to note a couple of unusual things. First of all, in this cycle, one half of the male population of the Board of Regents is up for re-election, or for at least their terms are limiting. That's 4 of the 8 on the Board of Regents currently. There are 4 women on the board, 8 men. They are all, these incumbents, the candidates we're considering now are all Caucasian, the incumbents at this point. There is one medical person. I think we categorize Regent Braga as a medical technician. He's a
doctor.
He's a physician.
Yeah, MD.
And we have, and so he's one of 2 medical people we have on the Board of Regents currently. And we, and this is not insignificant, we have one farmer on the Board of Regents, and that's Regent Bonsack, who may not be running for re-election this term. So those are things I imagine that we're going to want to be keeping in mind as we go forward.
And then you have some requests of the members here for this meeting, 4 or 5 ideas for a show and how to get the word out about recruitment.
Right. That is true. I think it's I can summarize the 6 or 7 things that I've indicated earlier. 4 or 5 ideas of how to get the word out and to whom. 2 to 3 major talking points for the recruitment effort. Those are the punchy lines that I spoke of earlier. Contact people in your congressional districts if you have those opportunities to get the word out. We're asking each member to think and make contact with anyone they may know. I guess that's a repeat of what I had just indicated. And contact with organizations, as well as edits and lists of organizations that you think we can put on there.
Do you want electronic responses if people think of something while they're driving home?
No texting while driving.
Well, I did not suggest that they would do it while they're driving, but if you get some ideas and you think about it after you're home, you can send David Fisher an email, right?
Sure.
Is that all right?
Yep.
Anything you'd like to say today? Yes. George first, then Jim.
Through the chair, Mr. Erickson. My computer is lousy. I'm in the 8th district, but I can't even get attachments from you. The thing goes 3 or 4 times and says it's not compatible with my incompatibility. I would like to serve on a committee, but if I can't be, contacted and kept up to date with that stuff, that's a problem. If there's some way, I'm in the 8th District, and I certainly want to, in fact, I don't know how the word got out. I already have a telephone call and having a lunch with a fellow next week already, and I'm sure it's regarding this, but if there's some way that it can be done, I would love to assist with that in the 8th District. Thank you.
Okay.
You have a fax machine.
No, I don't. I'm retired. I live at home, and I have this computer, and I was never good with the computer at work. In fact, I got a word processor in 1995, and my sister said, "Welcome to the 50s. I thought...
Madam Chair and Sally, I assume we have a little bit of budget for stamps.
Sure. We can mail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
We can mail. They met via phone, so conference call.
Okay.
Well, if we can work something, I'd be happy to.
All right. Jim?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could ask Chair Fisher, again, I go back to the practical here. I don't think this board, as I see it, or this council has, well, we recognize it, obviously, but not recognize the long-standing tradition that the legislature is honored to have a labor seat. And I think that, if Margaret can correct me, I think that goes back a long way and is unbroken.
Well, it was unbroken for a short time.
Yeah, right. I guess it was, but replaced quickly. So, Mr. Chair, Dave, how do you intend to kind of, do we address that at all? Is there a proclivity in your recommendations that's going to do that? I noticed that 3 years ago you put three names up, Steve Hunter, the labor representative, Peggy Lepick, who was not, of course, and I don't know whether Scott Johnson was a labor type or not.
He's a lawyer. We only have one lawyer on the board region.
Okay. So is that something that's appropriate for us to recognize, take judicial notice of, or how do we do that?
We had a lot of discussion at the time that appointment was made, and there is a lot of sensitivity and a lot of awareness about the fact that it has been tradition. We always say that reluctantly because they always say, well, it's traditional to have this and it's traditional to have that, and a lot of things have changed.
And a farmer, too. That's another tradition that's... probably generally not.
But what are you suggesting?
Well, I'm just asking if it's part of our, in the recruitment process, are we sensitive to that or are we blind to it? That's my question.
Yes, sir. I got that, and I appreciate you bringing that up, Jim, because obviously that's one of the demographics I neglected to mention. I certainly would have mentioned that. I think it isn't anything that, in my experience, we put down as a necessary criteria. But we pay attention to it. And I would have to say it's probably more informal, paying attention. The reason that we have a demographic list here of the type that's in your packet is so that we can check and make sure. We have the geographic covered fairly well because you have to choose from various congressional districts. These are less formal. So we list them for consideration, and that's certainly one of the items on the list.
And in this instance, we do have...
Paul, just a moment.
Jim, I would say just a little bit differently. First of all, there are practical realities we have to just accept and understand and so on. But it is also true that legally that there is no such thing, and we have to also clearly acknowledge that. There is no labor seat. There is no Mayo Clinic seat, mm-hmm. though it's not within the memory of men and women that hasn't happened except for the anomalous period earlier recognized both as to the clinic and as to labor, but there isn't a chance in a billion that the legislature is going to they're going to do what they're going to do, and we need to be realistic about that. But having said that, we still need to go out and recruit people and have serious candidates and propose people that are qualified and that we are comfortable recommending to the legislature. It's one of those things that many things can be true at the same time.
Okay. All right, thank you, Paul. Lois?
And then in line with your previous comments, Jim, about the strength of incumbency, one of our incumbents falls in that category.
All right.
And could I add, Jim, the greatest compliment is even if someone comes with an epaulet that says labor or female or male. When they serve on the regents, they serve for the good of the 12. And that should be the litmus test on whether they continue and who we select. And I probably shared my candid opinions with the committee when we had our subcommittee, because I've watched them work, and I'll wait to share those at that time. But let me tell you, the really good regents, and there have been regents who come with those epaulets, they put them in their pocket, and they work for the good of all. That's the greatest compliment to the university. Sure. But that's another discussion in December and January.
All right. All right, you're done. Thank you.
Just curious.
Any other comments? Yes.
I do. I think you need to add a category to this selection committee. You've got personal. You've got professional. Then you need to add a category called organizational challenges and opportunities. And they are the things most of you have brought up here. There's presidential transition, gubernatorial transition, the reality of legislative support, which is what Paul is getting to, and I know Mary Kay Delvo is in the back of the room, the legislative coordinator for the Alumni Association. And, Paul, she's long told our legislative committee we've got to stop asking for more and tell them what we could do with less. But legislative support and federal support are going to be very, very different down the line. And then the other thing I think that is happening is public-private partnerships. So the regents are really going to have a sophistication to understand how the university can get into these things, still retain its autonomy, and have it good for the university. So I mean, somebody could wordsmith those better, but I think just to think that you need professional experience and personal, but if you can't address those categories, or Billy, your group continues to work on it, they will be nice regents, pedestrian regents, but they won't be able to help the university president vision for the future and then get there.
Organizational development and also understanding the role of the different institutions of higher education also is important.
You could add that down, too.
This time around.
Come on, we're not looking for God here.
Yeah, I think that Margaret just nominated herself for the criteria committee, so maybe we could get you to write that down and
present it to Billy.
Yeah, why don't we? And I also said when our committee met yesterday, I'm a big proponent of call 4 or 5 people that are sitting in catbird seats that have watched, and Paul and I were talking about that have watched the regents for decades and say, what do they need at this moment in time? So, sure, if we do it by email, I'll help with that.
All right. Billy, did you have any comments?
No, I'll trap her.
Same comment. Well, okay, someone over here?
Yeah.
All right. So where we're at is if you have some thoughts to help the recruitment committee, you can either email or call or visit with David Fisher, and he'll welcome your input. And one thing we're going to do is we'll be sending out a media release on the new members of the Region Candidate Advisory Council, because every time you do that, you have an opportunity to say what the Region Candidate Advisory Council is and why they're there, and anytime you can give visibility. So if you have a Duluth paper or a Fargo form or some place where you'd like that to go, give that to Sally, and we'll be sure that that goes to those districts as well. Anything else on this? Hey, we're doing very well. And also, I will ask Sally to send out a list of the committees as we have put them together today. And then if you see, after you read it and see who the membership is that you'd like to be on it, send a note back to Sally, and you'll be on that committee. We'll take action officially at the next meeting.
Sure. I just
have one
Jennifer. Question before we move on from the committee assignments. Somebody had raised the concern about the voting process the last time, and that's another concern of mine as well. It was just a bit rushed. There was a process, but is that for the, this might already be answered, the interview process group, or is that something perhaps we need to make sure a couple of groups have talked about and discussed, and making that more transparent for everybody?
It would probably be a part of the interview process committee and a part of also the document committee. We can work together on that to see what we can do to improve it. Do you want to be on it?
Well, I think I'm already on the interview process, so just want to. Okay. It would probably, for transparency's sake, be good to call that interview process voting and questions. I know process implies that, but just to make that clear, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it.
Anybody else?
Harriet.
I can never tell when you're...
When I grow up, I'm going to be tall enough to be seen. I would just encourage new members, if you are not already serving on a committee, to volunteer. I think it's a great learning process, and it's a non-threatening way to learn about how things are done on our committee.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? All right, let's go to the, David has already given his report. Number 9, we will request volunteers for the upcoming board regents of the Board of Regents, so look at your calendar. And the purpose behind that is for us to understand the role of the regents, what they do in their meetings, so as we look at candidates, we know what they should be prepared to do. So we have a September 8th meeting coming up. Harriet, October 7th and 8th. Okay, just a minute, Rich and
is it just one Lois. Per meeting, Madam Chair?
No.
No.
Pardon me?
But not a crew, but one or two or three is not inappropriate. Yeah.
They're completely open, and I don't know how one could serve on this committee without right. seeing the committees in action first. That's where the real dialogue occurs. That's what Patty was answering to Paul, is the dialogue, the pushback that happens at the committee, and then the board meeting itself is very perfunctory.
It is. I know exactly what you're talking about because there's much more candor in the committee meetings.
Absolutely.
So when we get the volunteers for that particular meeting, we'll include the committee schedule as well, and which is usually the day before.
The day before yep. is when the committees are held. They will tell you what the committee is. They will give you the agenda of the items. And actually, we should ask the regents if they will just send us the e-packet for the regents' meetings. And there's plenty of chairs in the room for as many as we could have go to those regents' meetings.
That's a good idea, to put the people on the mailing list for the packet. For that September 8th meeting, is there one more member that would like to
I would like to.
Join? Yep. Pat and Lois, I also have you down for the October 7th, 8th meeting.
Those are the two
meeting.
That I'll be able to do.
Which one?
September 8th? And October are the two
George.
I'll be able to do.
George, September 8th. All right, November 11th and 12th. The week after the election, right? Jim, got to go and find out how things came out.
Put me down for that.
All right, Paul. Paul and Jim Erickson for 11th. And who else? Anybody else?
So that's right, really good. 10, 11, and 12, you're really...
What?
10, 11, and 12, you really have to pay attention to, right?
They do start sometimes Wednesday afternoon. Yes, they will have one. But they can get us the schedule. They're very, very organized.
Thank
you. Good. All right, December 9th and 10th, or 10th, 11th, and 12th. Thank you, Jennifer. Who else for December? All right, Jerry?
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Does the... Do the regents always meet in the metro area here, or do they hold meetings around the state that would be...
They used to meet more, and you'll have to help me with this. They used to meet more out state when there was budget for it, and now it's become... Go ahead.
They typically had their October meeting out state, but the last couple of years they have not. This coming year they're not planning any meetings out state because it does, there's significant travel expense associated with that. So what the regents have been doing is having smaller groups visit the coordinate campuses and having, you know, tours and meetings with administrators on the coordinate campuses, and then having their meetings all take place here in the Twin Cities just for expense purposes.
But it is broadcast online. If you go to your extension office in your area, they will bring that up, and you can watch that online, I believe. They should have the equipment and the people to pull that up for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. For December, we have Jennifer and Jerry. Anybody?
I will. Recognizing that on the 10th, we have a meeting of this group. At
yes,
10 in the morning,
the 10th, we do.
But I'll be there for the 9th and
okay.
morning.
Well, if people would like to go to the committee meeting or to the 9th, they could do that. All right, let's do the first 6 months of next year at the December meeting, because it's hard enough to handle 6 months of the future. Yes, David Fisher.
Madam Chair, if I could ask, when we get the schedule, I think from the office, could we all get a copy of that? Simply because I'm not sure of my calendar. I'd like to attend some too, I'd encourage any member to attend if you will. Not just because somebody else is going, don't feel you shouldn't be going, but I have a great interest in going.
Okay, thank you. Sally, we'll do that.
The other thing you might ask the university to do, they have two news things that they send out on a regular basis, and they will put you on that listserv. So what you can do, you can almost track on what's happening with the presidential search or any new grants that have come in, whatever, and you can scan it. It's all done in bulleted form, and it doesn't help you, I know, if you don't have a good computer, but it's how I stay updated since I retired, and it's a really good way to stay updated. But Sally, I will call the University News Service and ask them to get in contact with you, and then let this group decide if they want to receive those two pieces of communication.
Thank you. Thank you.
What are the two, and what are the differences, Margaret?
One is almost more of a where the university has been in the news, but some of those are very interesting. You're looking at federal grants and us losing that one grant to Kansas State. I mean, you know, you find that kind of thing. The other is almost what's going on inside the university. And what you can do, Paul, you can take yourself off the list if you don't like it. Just go down to the bottom and remove your name.
All right. We are 5 minutes over our designated adjournment time. If does anyone have any other issue that they would like to bring forward at this point?
Madam Chair, a couple brief comments. I wanted to follow up on Margaret's comment about, particularly for new members, if you have never been to a Regents meeting, you need to do it before December.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a must do. At least for myself, it was really eye opening, and that's why I want to get back to another one. Second thing is I would like to announce if our reference committee could meet very briefly.
Okay. All right. Sally Olson. Oh, Ardell, do you have a question?
Really, one quick thing on the pink slip. My email address is incorrect. You can just remember, don't put the dot between Rochester and MN. It's just Rochester MN altogether, .gov.
All one, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Got it.
Yeah, Sally Olson.
Also, if you could read, just go through those private and public contact lists, make sure I have accurate information there listed for you.
This is
and the private information is just for use between each other, not for the public. And then if you haven't updated your biography or submitted me a brief bio, if you could do that, that would be fabulous. And also for newer members, I sent you information about this as well, but there is an expense reimbursement form in your packet. And after the meeting, I can help you fill that out. And we just need to have that filled out, and Jane needs to sign off on it.
So. Okay. All right. Anything else?
I know it as well, Madam Chair. If people are going to be emailing me, my email address is not correct on this, so I'm going to have to bring it up or start mailing things off.
I never could tell which one it was. I mean, it's...
Well, it changes every... Yeah.
Okay. Got it. All right, dear. Yes, Harriet?
Sally, is this also available electronically so we can just download it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll email it out once it's up to, like, Paul requested it earlier.
All right.
Okay. Thanks.
Do I have a motion for adjournment?
No move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. We'll see you in December, if not before. And have a safe trip home.
Reference committee, my name is right over behind
yes.
Lois.
Oh, also, please leave your folders and name tags.